And that was the beginning for me. I'd be the miracle of wanting what I had thought about life, what she thought I had given to her. And I called my sponsor when I got home, and I was crying at the time. And I don't cry often. That's why I don't cry well. But I called him, and I told her what had happened. And she said to me, I was waiting to see how long it was going to take you to find out what you were doing. And I said, I've been carrying the message. She said, no, you've been carrying the disease. And that's exactly what I've been doing. Not to other people, but within myself. I think I talked about my spiritual awakening. I always thought of that story at one particular time. I went to see this girl who was still now on my life. And I told the story one time. She was sitting in a group, and I got out that day. You know, because she didn't know. And that's another thing I learned. People don't know whether you're doing what you tell them to do or not. And it really doesn't make a difference, I don't think, to them what you're doing, what you tell them to do or not. But me as an individual, if I tell you that I'm doing something, or if I suggest that this is an experience that I've had that has helped me, I better be telling the truth. Because you'll never know, and I'll never be able to forget. And that's part of what this app means to me. Carrying a message that I have. Because if you don't have a message, you carry it. And I prove that myself. Then with the practice of these principles and all our affairs, I had a lot of trouble with that too. In fact, I went to him one day and said to her, I don't understand that part of the 12 steps. She said, well, what is it you don't understand? That's very simple. Carry the practice of the principles and all your affairs. I said, well, what principles are they talking about? And she just hesitated for a very slight second before and said, well, I can understand that after all. You don't have any. And I was really rather surprised that she was sitting like that to me because I've been very principled all my life, usually in her office. But before I can say anything to her, she said, listen to what I'm trying to tell you. You have spent your entire life living by his principles, her principles, their principles, those principles. You've got principles you don't know they came from. She said, what you have to do is find a set of principles that are comfortable to you and practice those in all your affairs. That means that I have to be comfortable and honest within myself. And it's taken me a long time. I still find that I add principle here and a principle there because deep down inside there's been a whole lot of this judgment and all kinds of things that I didn't realize I was guilty of. Until something happened, then I realized, I know that's me. And what I have to do is I have to turn around and I have to say, I want to get rid of that. And for me, I have to actually do it. I don't know about anybody else, but I have some kind of gimmick to hold on to remind me of what it is that I'm doing this lusting up and making me uncomfortable. Because I don't like to be uncomfortable. You know, I've prayed for a lot of people. I've done a lot of things, a lot of gimmicks trying to take care of this. I was telling about the other day when I was working in the office for Eddie. I just love that. I used to say this, Eddie. That wasn't true. Now, I was working for him. And I used to give some of the Al-Anon to some of the patients. Now, I didn't say, this is Al-Anon, and this is what we do. What I did was I just used the principles of the program, as I knew them, to kind of get into the patients. And most of them were very usual dogs. Most of them realized it did, you know, because they got away from me. I was no fun. And I had this one little gal come in that she came in for a check-in, and I had Eggman, and started to take some x-rays and so forth. And she said, she was a real kind of timid little thing, you know. And I've never been a timid little thing. I've tried to be timid little thing a couple times more about it, but, you walk into a room like a bull and try to be timid. It's hard. It's real hard. But anyhow, I started to think there was something wrong. I didn't know what it was. And I said to her, Mr. Wim, are you all right? She said, yes, dear. And I shot doesn't want to ask anything. And she said to me, you know, about my husband. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. And she said, if I had just a point in the time, I'd maybe call the fire department. I'd been able to save him. And I said, well, that's true. But supposing you had money in this, and you had called the fire department, you hadn't been able to save him. Would you want to go through life for the next hour or many years, wishing you had 30 minutes, or 45 minutes, or an hour? And she said, oh, but that's not a point, really. It's just I don't have anybody to talk to. She said, I haven't bothered. She has her own grief, so I can't really talk to her because we're not good for one another. And I thought about it for a minute. I said, are you walked out here for your dental appointment, don't you? And she said, yes. And well, next time you're walking down, you feel like right now, just stop somebody on the street, tell them what you want to tell them. I mean, you never see them again, they'll think you're right, but you care, you don't even know. And she didn't say anything then, so they kind of died. About 6 months later, she came back in, she had on one of the brightest, reddest coats I have ever in my life. And she said, how do I? And I said, beautiful. She said, go say things, I've always wanted a red coat, he didn't have one, and I saw this, and I said, I'd get it. And I said, well, good, she looked great. She did look great. She said, I had a new day, too, then. And I said, what's that? And she said, matter, I am, I feel upset. I just passed people on the street and said, could be you. So you don't necessarily have to stop and tell them. But what she was asking was the freedom they give us in the fellowship, the freedom to do it without feeling all bad at, you know? My sponsor even did that too one time, you know? I used to walk the street and I'd see him pretty strange and I'd say, hi, and go right on. And take about 10, 15 steps and turn around and I'd still stand there trying to figure out who I am, you know? Because people have grown away from the idea of being friendly, you know? Everybody is afraid of a box and they don't know how to be friendly. So what I'd done her was what you had given me, and that was freedom to do it if you want to, which is the principle that I practice. My husband, of course, is not as happy about some of the little things I used to do in the office, but that was not my problem, you know. He used to say, if you don't let her home, she's going to be in here every day. And she was in here every day, you know. But I didn't care, because I think she felt that was sort of a haven, a place where she could come where everything would be okay. And then when we moved the office, I ran, well, we were having lunch, and she was in there. And he used to say to me, please don't think about people. Couldn't you think about people that show up? And for a long time, I was psychic, you know. But we're sitting in the restaurant, and I looked at her, and I said, oh, my Lord, there's Mrs. Williams. And I got walked over and said hello to her and came back and sat. And he said to me, well, she'll be in the office. And I said, well, she shouldn't be in the office. He said, everybody you run into, think about or talk about, comes into the office. He said, I don't know, the patients just keep coming back. He gets real cantankerous. And I said to him, well, it's a shame that you decided to be a dentist. You should have been a mortician. And he said to me, why would you say a thing like that? And I said, because their patients never come back. And you don't have to worry about them. But anyhow, it's a... Let me see what I wrote last night. I want to thank you, believe me, before I forget it. I've done more writing this weekend than I have in 20 years. And I learned an awful lot of things that I had let slip. So I don't know why I have brought to you, but I want you to know to do give me something that I know what I did. I'm doing this, you know, because I already know, so I don't have to do this. I put the pieces of the I don't have to do it. But I had to do it this weekend, and like I told the other day, I got all kinds of stuff in here that I haven't even said. But it's not important to you, it's for me, and that's the strange miracle, the way this thing works. You know, you go someplace, you don't know what to do, and you're not sure what you're doing right, what you do, that all you can do, you know, and so I write, and write, and write, and I sat over there, and I thought, what is it like that? You know what, because something I hadn't thought of in a long, long time. The idea of not sharing anything that I hadn't done, experience, strength, and hope. And I had a little guy who was kind of a music type. And by the grace of God, I tried to help that girl without any experience whatsoever. But for some reason or other, when she started to tell me what her situation was, I realized I had no idea what you're talking about. I had never had anybody treat me the way she was being treated. And I said to her, you give me your telephone number. I'll call a gal that has had an experience similar to yours, and I'll have her call you. And I did. And I think that's part of the principles of the program. Because one night I tell you how to do something that I haven't done, and I have no experience to connect with, I'm giving advice. And advice is one of the worst things in the world that I can do. Because you don't know anything that's going on. Nobody can count on you yet. It's going to be able to tell the story and tell all the details. It may be possible for another community to make some kind of a legitimate suggestion. Because that one little thing that they forget to mention is care. That's the thing that makes your decision or your advice unworkable. And I don't want that responsibility anymore. I want to be able to pass on, keep track of who I sponsor. That's their problem. If, in fact, you call me and say, would be my sponsor, you'd say, well, I'd rather be your friend. And I said, my new sponsor. I said, well, it's not for me, like a new friend. Because a friendly basis is two-way street. She is to me, and I to her. And that's a woman with me. A woman was my friend. The first woman I leave, including my mother, that I ever trusted 100%. So free enough to tell her anything that's going on. And not caring whether she told anybody else or not, because deep down inside I knew she wouldn't. It's her principles. I got a lot of my principles from her. The idea of allowing them to be the dignity to do whatever they have to do in order to absolutely, positively want what we have in this fellowship so they can thrive. One of the little guys here asked me why I didn't tell a story about my son getting drafted, and I didn't remember that I hadn't. But that was a story about dignity. My number one son was drafted, I was in a tizzy. And you know, the fun part is, things like this happen. I don't realize it's control that I'm dealing with. It's I don't know what I think it is. Maybe I'll write it, I'll find out. The minute the guys noticed that he was going to be drafted, I just went, flipped over. Everything I knew about let go and think about and all these other things went out of my head. Right now, I gotta do this. See, I have a tendency to talk that way. And I don't know what to train myself, because he's a lot like his father, or same candidate, you know. And I kept going to the meetings, and I didn't come out and tell him what I had on my mind. See, that was another little principle that slid in my life later on. I was still playing that game. The game of, I've been around too long to let the new member know that there's such a thing's a problem after I'm on. You know, sort of like after that. Anyhow, I hid a lot, though. And my girlfriend, Glenn, the one with the bad one, I guess she didn't put those shoes to step through our balls. And one night she said to me, Lee, why don't you draw that kid back and allow him the dignity failure? I never heard those words used in the sentence before. I didn't know there was dignity failure. But you might say, if he never fails, he can't possibly succeed. Because he's never experienced one thing, he'll never recognize the other. And you know, that since that night, I haven't been doing anything to help my meeting or even to my team meeting. And I don't do that either. It's just watched somebody walk through that door, stick around, and become a success. I don't mean monetary technique, because success to me today is something that you invite people to drive around the block to a party. Success to me today is the ability to get up in the morning, look in the mirror, know who I am. Or to stand here, right this minute, my name is me, and know who I'm talking about. Because like I said the other day, all my life, I had a name, but I never had an identity. I was always somebody's system, but that somebody's something else. And I grew up that way. I grew up believing that what you knew, but who knew. And I came down and I found out that who you know is only important from the standpoint of you know them, that's all. But that was the hardest to learn. He got on beautifully in the army. Because when he got there, he had problems. But I told about him the other day, I won't hear anything from him about the sunset. All right, I'm not always in leadership talking then. Because just the people I told you, they called me, oh no, that's he's an alcoholic. That's the one. But anyhow, that's pretty much the idea of how I got what success was. You see, I was brought to Lee, I had to be successful. I didn't know what it was. That's why I couldn't find it. As I went back into my inventory and did a few thousand other things, even to write this weekend, I realized that there is a certain amount of snobbishness in thinking that you have to be something that somebody else thinks you are. Now, if you understand that, you know what I mean. He's already in trouble. Because I can't go through life being what you want me to be. I have to be myself. And sometimes I walk away from somebody and I'm like, I sure made back to myself that time. And then the other side says, so what's that? You don't have to go back. Today it's not necessary for me to be so narcissistic. I keep going back where I know I'm going to be unhappy. It's almost like the story about the guy, the bowler. Remember when I had Paul Echoes? And the guy that went to see Don Wayne and something about 15 times. And somebody said, when'd you go to see that? It's so many times for him. He said, well, first time I went to fall off the horse. And I said, yeah. He says, well, I'm going to keep going back until he don't fall off the horse because I went right better than that. And that's sort of the way I was, see. Keep going back, see, they can change, so I'll feel better. And that's a pretty flimsy piece of ice to set your life on. But that's one of the principles, too, that I developed by practicing all my affairs. Well, also told me that if I want to really, truly develop a comfortable set of principles within and without element, the concentrate on the 12th tradition. I think I told you that the other day. And also, okay, I told that the first tradition allowed me to become a member of my own family. Because the first tradition has given me the ability, I don't know if ability is a good word, but anyhow, it's given me the incentive to take labels off people. I don't think of people as being doctors, nurses, ditch diggers, I don't think of them like that. People to me are people. I either like them or I don't like them. But it doesn't make any difference to me what they are or who they are or where they came from or anything else. Because I can't afford that kind of luxury. I am for, you see, I'm the people that I think, see, said by science, something about negativity. I was born negative. No, I believe that to the hour of the day and time I was born. I don't know, I did it wrong, so possible. But one of the things that well taught me in developing these principles and also in working those traditions was to search out whatever situation I'm in, find one positive, and hold on to it. And every time my mind would slip into the negative, come back to the positive. And I told this one little girl, and she gave me a tape called Accentuate the Positive. Eliminate the negative. It was Gene Rossi that recorded it. And between daily word on Monday, I was reading every day, and he accentuated positive. It's over my head, it's not, you know, I'm either reading or listening, you know, something. But it got into my head. And after, about 2 years ago, I had a bad day. I mean, a really bad day. Now I'm not out of passed away. I was 5 minutes late for her funeral, and you're 5 minutes late for her funeral. You're really a big trouble, because it's all over. And it was raining, and the freeways were a mess, and I came back, and he was in the city. Oh, it was just going down the hall. It was going to hell, it was, too. Everybody seemed to be tense. And they were all saying, never thought that I was the one that was tense, was saying them. It's always a mess, I see. And I've been asking them to have talk on serenity. And about 5 hours ago, it was getting dark. I had out of the with my husband standing on the floor yelling at me, "You're crazy to drive that damn car in this rain." Of course, that didn't help my serenity either. And I just got pushed down the pedal and thought, "You damn, you better get out of my way, because I'm going to Tustin talking serenity." And I got on the freeway. And the one freeway wasn't too bad, but as I made the transition going to 57 from the 60, there was some smart, like, little gal in a red sport car that almost turned me on the road. But that was one too many. I mean, I had been serene all day, but now I had to do something about it, and I was going to race her, because I had a sports car, too. Yeah, the way comes in, it eventually, this lane goes out, there's only one lane, you know. And we were about from here, maybe where the coffee is, before that lane, something like this. And she thought she was going to beat me in the fucking line, didn't really care, son. And I started trying on that accelerator when the thought went through my head. If you miss, you may be one of us. So I'm just sort of having thing. Oh, I get the race leg, but I let her get out of 57 first, and then I played my game of tag, you know, he hit me and I hit her, and I wasn't for the police to stop her, she was really rather dangerous. But anyhow, I passed her. But on the way, when I went footy with the female on the freeway, the thought goes through my head, you know, I wonder if she realizes, if it hadn't been for Alan, she might be dead, because I might wreck her, you know, because I never knew how bad Alan to be before I got Alan. And so I thought, Alan saved her life. So I had a number of people that did things to me on the freeway that I didn't retaliate to because of Alan. And we got stuck, and I told that story. And after the meeting, this guy asked me, and he says, "Are you going home?" I said, "Well, I don't know, I didn't have any coffee, you know." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, I want to get off the freeway." But, you see, those kind of things, those kind of things I learned here. It doesn't mean that I get pure. You know, I probably rate people more than I think they've done it. Everybody's writing us letters to the air, because I found out if I could be busy doing something, be mad at somebody, then I'm not quite a nurse. I don't have to, you know, the nurse said to me, "Oh, you're looking out the window." I said, "Yeah, I'm looking for an emergency landing." And I hope I'm going to talk to you the fact that there is no such thing as everyday well. That I know. Better yet. Well, no. But, Saji says, if you don't learn to laugh at yourself, you're going to miss the joke of your generation. And I believe that, see? Which is rule 62. Don't take yourself seriously, you know? And, I have a few little things that she says that I like. We wouldn't worry so much about what people think of us if we remember how seldom I do. You know? Because that's true. People don't go around thinking and talking about each other as much as I used to think they did. And then if someone else died, I go around talking a whole heck of a lot either. And that's also one of the traditions that I use. These rumors, people go around telling other people, you know, never hear anything good. Maybe do nothing, but you know, California, you know, nobody calls you on the phone. That's right, so, and tell you something good about it. They call you on the phone, they say, "Have you heard?" Please bother me, you know, because I got memory. And my memory does not allow me to suck off some of these things. If I'm in a particularly vulnerable position at a certain time, I like that. I can even sell it, I might say. Anyhow, if I'm kind of in a rut myself, and somebody called and said, "Have you heard?" You know, I used to be very interested in what I heard. Didn't know I was good, but at least it was, once again, I guess the Lord commanded it. I don't know, but it was bothering me. And, well, I said, "Well, you have tradition, how's that?" It says we have no opinion on outside issues, and for name, I'm drawn in public controversy. I don't know how she's going to get that now on a personal level, Jay. She said, "Well, somebody comes along to tell you something about somebody else that's hurtful to them. Oh, you have to shut up. You don't have to listen to it. Or sometimes it starts off, don't tell anybody, but." And she said, "Did that to you today? Don't worry, I won't tell anybody." The generator of telling you, because the idea of telling you is because it won't carry on. And sometimes, you know, not one basis for this story, wherever it is, going around. And I know a lot of guys, both, and guys, really, they both A and L on, that have been really hurt by something that somebody started that had maybe a little teeny bit of truth in it, but not a lot. And as it grew, it's like a gate where you sit in a circle and you whisper something, and it goes around, and it's hurtful. And so that was one of the traditions that helped me get develop a principle that I've been practicing on my face. The 12th one word I loved, because I love to stay married, to say, "Man, I can't believe I've been married as long as I have." You know, aside from that, I'm not the only girl around, I'm my wife, you know. And I'm not sure I had anything to do with that either, you know. I was a dependent dictator. You ever been one of those? Instinctively, I think one of the reasons I never left him, but I instinctively knew that if I'd walk out, I would fall flat on my face. It wasn't fear of not being able to take care of things, because I've always called some of my relatives to do it for me, you know. If you stay on the phone, they offer. And they don't think that, but I wasn't concerned about that. Somehow, emotionally, it were like two leaning towers of pizza, or whatever it is. And I knew that if he moved, I'd fall. That's how mostly I begin to place anything. Last night we were talking about metal, and I think she said all kinds of boxes that she's eventually getting cleared out. I'm not turning mine, I'm looking to get. And I said, that's why I'm the back of the truck, because this is like we're sending our children's inheritance. I got mine boxes. I lost my train of thought. Can't remember what I got for business. Yeah, I can only attach to anything. And you know, I cannot let go of it. And there used to be a guy in our area talking a great deal about clearing away the wreckage of the past. Now, I had an equity cut that my mother had given to me, and some of the road got knocked off and the handle came off, and every time I passed around, I think, oh, I want to get some of that kind of blue and fix that cup, because I get rid of it. My mother gave it to me, and it's Christmas, and it was just, you know, that whole rigmarole. And I went to this meeting, and Dick H., who always talked about it, said, we have to clear away the wreckage of the past, and run away about that cup. Because now I had glue, but I'd lost the handle. And I had glue and cup, no handle. And so I vowed that I would practice what I had heard that night, and I went right home, and the next day, the great common circumstance, I got rid of the glue and got rid of the cup. A week later, I found the handle and the one. You know. And I kept telling my, you know, I kept telling my friends, I should never done that, see? I should never have thrown the cup away. And then, of course, I came back with a slow hand stroke, what do you really believe without a handle? And I said, oh, I'm supposed to do it, but that's not the point. The point is, I threw away, and then I found the handle. She said, well, I threw the handle away, I'm going to find the glue the handle and the cup, and I'll be up. But, you don't talk a lot today about throwing away the wreckage of the past. But it is necessary, I guess. That's why he didn't box it. But anyhow, I'm about tucked out. Does anybody have a question? All right, may I? I threw away the handle. I sure did. And I was felt real bad. You know, I haven't missed that, cup at all. I've got some other cups. And I have things, I have to wash and everything, and I have to do all these things that create problems for myself. I haven't almost that. And yeah, I get collecting, you know. That's why I got to the place where I told my kids, don't need 8 or 10 little things, you know, because I have 8 children, 3, whatever it was. I don't know the count of them. And then I got 8 children, I've got 9 grandchildren, and Christmas time, Mother's Day, birthday. It's like a special Christmas, you know, I turn them that way. And I got all these little things, and I keep my hand, no matter what to do, I got more stuff around me in your life. So I said to them, why don't you just pull your money and get me something nice? And they did. That's what they're doing now. For half hour, how much you want spending? I have to get a little bit more. But I remember one time my son, well, talk about training. My son George, they wanted something. I don't know what it was. And I said, George, I'm sorry, we just can't do that because we have to. And he looked so sad that I just went on, you know, said he looked to be a sorry guy. That's sort of torturous. They divided it, and before long, I had George almost intended to a little guy, you know. And he just said, can I use the phone? I said, sure. So he disappeared and he used the phone, and pretty soon came back. And he said, Mom, oh, I did tell him how Daddy and I were getting much older, and we might not be able to, you know, I can't give the whole story, but you got an idea what I'm talking about. And he came back at your phone call, and he says, Mom, do you think you'd live on $800 a month? And I said, well, I probably could, yeah, why? He said, we're going to give you $800 a month. And I said, who's going to give me $800 a month? And he said, we are. And I said, well, I could have made $800 a month, George, but what about Daddy? And I turned around and walked away and went and used the phone again. And 20 minutes later, my number two son Billy called on the phone. And he said, Mom, tell the phone number. And I said, oh, what are you talking about? He said, I have 2 phone calls for George. And I said, well, it's mine. He said, he called and everybody telling me $800 a month for Mom because Mom's getting old and she's broke. And so he just called me back and said, you want Daddy to get some money too? Child training, right, you know. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Yes. In Al-Anon, I wasn't wanted to die. I didn't look good, but I was sick. And I have seen people come in Al-Anon that are one jump this high being gone. But they don't eat right, they don't sleep, they don't do anything, and they get run down physically, and they don't care of themselves. Mm-hmm. That was one thing I didn't go to a doctor, because he might tell me I was sick. And if he told me I was sick, then I'd be in big trouble, because I didn't want to be sick. See, I never faced reality. I have doctors around. But I have watched, and I'm sure there's a lot of you that have watched gals in Al-Anon. I don't think the change is quite as drastic as it may. But they seem in Al-Anon, they seem to come alive again. This is a question of getting healthier. It's a question of being alive. Because, you know, I've seen people that have committed Al-Anon that they look like they were just ready to lay down and die. That was despair. It wasn't a physical type thing. And I sometimes think despair can be worse than having sometimes physical disability. We're talking, see, I talked to somebody, you know, what I said there was out there, or over there, or wherever, so they're repeating. But a gal out in San Diego, a panel, Al-Anon, into a psych ward. And she called me one day on the phone. She said, Winnie, do you mind if I play your tape tonight? Do what you want to. I mean, then I give her the meeting, but I thought I was very well known. So she took this panel with his tape in, and there happened to be a female in that ward that had not spoken a word since they turned her in. She wouldn't eat, she wouldn't do anything, she wouldn't talk, she wouldn't do anything. And Laura asked the nurse, it would be all right. If she brought that out in, whoever having a meeting, just listen to the tape. That's all I want to know. And the nurse said, well, she'll go, yes, she can. And so she played my tape. About halfway through it, all of a sudden the woman said, she in here? And Laura said, no, I don't think so. And the woman said, well, she's crazier than me. Now, it turns out that gal had a daughter who had a problem with drugs. And she had gone to Al-Anon meeting. And somebody had asked her what they, you know, like to sometimes do. Your husband's a drunk, or your daughter's a drunk, or getting anybody in the never got from an opportunity. Anyhow, she made a statement that her daughter had a problem with drugs, and asked her to leave. And she ended up in that hospital. Because she said, oh, that's one of the reasons. That I don't give a damn who you are, and I don't care what the problem is. If you go to Al-Anon meeting where I am, feel that. Because I believe if you're wrong, you'll eliminate yourself. I don't have to be responsible for that. But I'm glad you asked that question because I forgot. I did tell somebody about that. And I think that's from, yeah.
Oh, hey, you're talking about emotions, actually. I don't know what I do anymore, but I don't know what I do. 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 I don't know what I do And we've been out to the place. And we came in, what we really know where we live, where we sat down, she had a hot tea, and set out the plate of cookies. And she sat down and she drank one of the eggs, one tea. Well, you know, I've never done anything but one of the things. And I just wondered if you have gotten better over the years, if that didn't do that.
Well, I got a little bit better. I don't really know how much better, depends on what it gets, you know. I can give you a classic example that was recently, though, that the patch just happened last night. When they said snacks, I thought, well, I'll have another cream puff. And I went over and I got another cream puff. And then they brought out some delicious cookie cake with strawberry icing and ice cream. And I thought, well, it was rather good last night, so I'll have a piece of that, too. And then I saw cream cheese, so I had cream cheese and a bagel. And I had my own bag sitting there. But by the time I finished the ice cream and the cake, I really wasn't too interested in either the bagel or the cream puff. And I haven't got them in another restaurant. Somebody walked by and said, oh, you got one of those. You were lucky. And I said, will you please take it? And she said, oh, no, you go ahead and eat it. That's better. Tell me. You know. But finally, she took it. And we were both happy. I hope. Good. Brad wanted it. But that's an example. It depends on what it is and how what frame of mind I am. You know, I can have a yes or no. Well, I can't give you a yes or no. Nothing in my life anymore is yes or no, believe it or not. I mean, it depends on the day. You talk about celebrating the day. Yesterday, I might have answered you entirely differently. And tomorrow, I may answer you entirely differently. But right now, this is the way it seems to me. That example is fresh in my mind. So for a day, I will use that example of my gluttony to make today a little different than what yesterday. You understand what I'm trying to say? Sometimes the experience of yesterday or last night won't mean this today because I practiced what I learned yesterday. Now next week, I'll forget to shoot my people. See, it's all the way to say it, too. But, oh, I forget. I don't even for you. Come here, man. I'm so grateful for you cannot be seen. I even, you know, I just have a little bit. I'm sorry, I mean. Do you have a sponsor?
Yeah.
My sponsor, when he had that, he called it a safari. In fact, I even saw that when I was walking over to my room, you know, because there was an assistant cyber and they felt it. A priest decided that was doing a show with Catherine, said new fish was mad at me, and he sent from at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, because 5 o'clock in the afternoon is dark, and after I didn't have to walk through the jungle, and I'm sick of it. And it's funny, I thought about that, but my, anyway, I'm not as well as you think I am. But then he had his one beer, after a year, 3 days of fighting. That was a catastrophe for me, too. And as a fact, I didn't realize at the time, I had changed my focus from what had been to him again. My sponsor was one that said to me, did you learn anything from this experience? And I said, yes. And she said, then it wasn't a wasted experience. Because anything you learn something from, feel sorry for him, he had to go back up there. But I can understand he's back away from him, he didn't know what to say. You see? But you were talking about him. And this is you. This is the way I feel. This is what's going on in my life. Not he got drunk again. Because what you then is exactly right there. I'm not just as you don't understand me. I'm back to square one. That's why I went out to all your family. You see? Because I had spent what I thought was a year and 3 days watching him improve the quality of his life without moving myself. And I'm sorry, Ed never has to find the necessary to take another drink. But Eddie does. I hope and pray that what I have built up as knowledge and faith, and I hope that I've built up will allow me to allow him the dignity of doing whatever he has to do. I would rather have him do that than for me to live on a night that every time he walked out the door, I wonder, you know what I mean? See, I had to separate myself from his problems. I had my own problems. And it has something right on. I mean, I don't know what the situation is now. And really, as far as he's concerned, my neighbor, like I said, a little out of me when she was out of here with him. I kind of leaned over to her quietly as she stopped. And I said, honey, that didn't bother me at all. And she looked at me like I crawled out of my box. And I And she said, why wouldn't it bother you? I said, because it's your husband. and that's the truth. Your husband never bothered me. And sometimes, unfortunately, that's the attitude you had in some meetings. But you may be fine here to bring yourself. You may be one. Don't stop talking because they back off. If they back off, let them back. Look at where it is. You got in his time, like, maybe the end chapter 5. You may. Just don't mean in our time table. Yeah. Talking about 3 days about that. Well, I was always so scared inside. Afraid that he'd leave, afraid that I'd make him happy, afraid that I wasn't doing the right thing, and always constantly the same. Actually, the same thing as I started drinking was concerned. Focus was on making him happy so that he liked me. I felt so thrilled that this person would choose me. I said, fine, that was such a him, but he didn't know, and I didn't find out for a long time. But I made my mind fake last night, somebody was saying. I made my mind I was marrying him, and I did. I made my mind I was marrying him, and I did. But then I switched to her, I thought, oh, I'm so lucky. That gradually, he became my higher power. He became the one who controlled how I thought, how I did, how I felt, what I did. And then that feeling changed around to where I was caught between feeling so grateful, want to kill. That's what drinking is about. Even though I never believed anything. See, it was that control. That's the big story part. And knowing that if he left me or if I thought about leaving him, I would be a complete failure. He was my life. And I didn't even know. Until I got down. It was one of the strange things. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The principal, to me, that I practice held me there between being comfortable inside and being screwed up inside. You understand that? And I'm the only one that knows when that happens. I can run off the side and I can make you say everything is just wonderful. I practice for years, that's what you'd be like. But inside, my volcano is getting ready to explode. Alright, when something like that happens to me, when somebody gets me so upset, I can get that ear back. And I recognize, because I have my ears and I know when it's coming back, I get out of there. If I can't leave that, I go into another room, I do something to get away from this. What did I come up? Make a decision, do I want to stay here and put a place, or do I want to go to a show, or do I want to call somebody on the phone? Getting away from the situation helps me. There's a guy down there by the name of Martha that has her husband resigned from alcoholics anonymous about 1963, I think it was, wasn't that? He got mad at him, so he just wrote a formal recognition, resigned my egg. And, what's her name? And Martha had been going on, she had 34 or 35 years now on. But she had to have the conclusion of how she felt about Bill. And she realized that she loved him, and that leaving him because of his resignation and because of his tricky, that she'd gotten off her nose to her face. Those are her words. And so she decided that what she would do would be to accept the bad days and enjoy the good days and accept the bad days. What she does is, if she calls home, she tells him, oh, Bill's been drinking. She says, I just called him, I'm coming home, I'll see you later. See, now he's the bad guy, the real Messiah, he's not good to see anybody, and he knows what she's doing. She just lets him drink until he's drinking, period. She lets him drink until he's drinking, and then takes right out and goes right on. It is possible to enjoy life without alcohol, drinking, not that, and not let you. All you have to do is live your life, Mr. Hit. Now, I know that's going to help you or not, because it's not easy to live with somebody that has you out in their life, but it's okay. See, I had to think about drinking as being the scourge of the world. It had to be all right. Drink. Otherwise, the concept of alcoholism being a disease did not make sense to me. Everybody that drinks is not an alcoholic. But there are people whose other people's drinking bothers them. That's disease too. And that means mine. That's what you have to come to terms with the fact that everybody that drinks is not an alcoholic. Everybody who's married to somebody who drinks is not going to be an alcoholic. We take a very particular kind of person, like me. And up here, see? That's why I'm drinking, I'm not an alcoholic. I would be out of the world and load the baby bin. You know what I mean? But it's okay. Just don't sit around and watch it. Because while you're watching, you're trying to figure out what I can do to stop it. And go on, you the inner shit in. I don't know what you told me. I said, who told me I couldn't read this? Cassie did. She's right. I didn't do that thing. I wear it just to make it happy.
I don't mean actually a lot of there's not there anybody else who's going on to personally and everything. I mean, it's a form of, when you did this thing, you depend on the responses, and that's different when you control it. That's a huge thing.
Yeah, but that's what it was.
And I know something about the bottom reason, kind of worrying about it, and you can't defend mine, because it's a nice degree, and you
know,
can you tell a little bit about
their fine,
and you can
go attachment? Well, attachment, yes, I guess. Detachment means separate. Separate means you go your way on the line. But it is possible to have an attitude of detachment without actually suffering. Is that what I'm talking about? Because it's just like my not responding to what Eddie says. My formula of never answer a statement. And I answer each question with a statement. There's an argument there. See, like you said, like you see the day of the sea, the moon is really out tonight. That's a statement. You want the moon to be out, the moon to be out. I'm not going to miss my mind. My problem was always that if he said something like that, I'd say, what are you trying to do, be smart? You know that it's the middle of the day. Why would you say a thing like that? And then he would tell me why he said that, to see whether or not I was right. No, what the sun was out there, the moon. Now we're really into it. See, he insulted my integrity every time. Everything that went on personally. Well, I had to stop that, because that was worse than great. And so what I did after lots of trial and error things was decide how important is it? Yeah. If it's going to change the quality of my life to be better, if it's not, let it go. Why bother it? Does that
answer your question? Yeah. There's hard
enough,
too, though,
being
with
the only feelings.
You know,
only feelings?
I have
myself
there, and sometimes, you know,
kind of
balance of, you know,
responding out there. Exactly. You just said, and I can say, well, how do you do that? Well, if I don't respond, I won't react. You see? If I let it go, then I don't react to it. I don't carry it away with me and say, I'll think about that, go back and take care of it. Mm-hmm. I don't carry it away, let go, forget it. Sometimes it'll come back to me, and I'll say, well, I didn't tell her that. I think I'm going to like that. Mm-hmm. And the reason I probably didn't do it, is because I wasn't supposed to do it. You know, that's kind of one of those coincidences where God comes in to take care of it. You may learn the answer to that by making the second and the wrong thing. And that's all right. You saw for spiritual improvement rather than spiritual perfection. I memorized the whole chapter. Reading God John. What is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, he's been like 90. Eleanor was talking a lot about the relationship. It's possible, you know? And sometimes, basically, the basic color of the person with him. I oftentimes go through a lot of the sentence, like, when you talk about grabbing your hand and explaining the question, you know? Sometimes I'm sure that's the hardest thing in the world. And I know I had grown up with my board here, and it was like, he had the interface, well, I was actually comfortable with that, so maybe you can give him a hug, or, you know, going through all that, you know, and growing through your relationship. And I'm on, like, my relationship is a different label.
That's right.
I'm talking about, yeah. And still give him a hug, you know, not forgetting to deny him
this, or... That's learning not to fear rejection. Yeah. Rejection is a label. Sometimes when you walk up to somebody and wants your arms around them, and you can almost feel the ice, they don't want you to come here. They don't want your affection. Well, I don't know what you do, but I go ahead and hug them. Because if one of us is going to be uncomfortable, it ain't going to be me. Survival. And usually, the person that throws this attitude of, don't hear me, it's afraid of you. Why would I? I was afraid to let my kids, my husband, and my mother, and my father, anybody know that I care about. Because it was the only thing I had that I knew they could beat you to death with. I had to keep down the side without knowing. I thought they did things for them, and you took them places, and bought them things, and all this monetary stuff. They should know you love. And the difference, I've got 8 children, and you already know, there are 4 old ones who have benefited my personality, my intelligence, my integrity, my pocketbook, the whole bit. And it's indeed mine. Young 4 had the benefit of that one. They had the benefit of knowing I cared about them. And I had a hard time, for a long time, teaching the other ones not to be as rigid as I was. See, I brought them sort of up to be like I had been brought, because there was no way I knew. But throughout the and throughout and through also, those old 4 had been enough. You know, I got a dog that has a husband that does a little bit of rain. He came home, took out his last night, one night, and he was doing pretty good. He got mad and fell in his night and went out and put on the porch. And there was something in the next day, and she said, you know what, there's some guy coming on the phone and asked me if I wanted to put deadbolt and shutters on the house and for my protection. And I just told him, what do I need protection for? I got a big dog, 6 and a half, that I husband switched on the porch. Well, so there's no shame to actually have an porch, you know. That's one of the whole things. Two of us, I think, hung on. But that's sort of what it is. We have time for, just a minute. Oh, no. You never destroy the animal. Oh, well, I hope for your best mother. We're going to North, probably Washington, or maybe Oregon, I don't know. But they were discussing whether or not it was God. And they were sitting in the bar during the time, and somebody said, it's not a God. And the other one said, oh, yes, there is. And the other person said, I can prove there's no God. And the second one said, if you prove there's no God, why? He said, well, I was up in Alaska, back in the country in there, and he said, there was a sudden hellstorm, a blizzard. The dog ran away, and the sled broke, and I was just having a terrible time. I just knew I was going to die, and I got down on my knees for the first time in my life, and I said, God, if there be a God, help me. And the second man said, well, you didn't prove there was a God. You proved there was a God. You're here. The first man says, oh, jump in conclusion. An Eskimo came along and led me back to the possession. They refer sometimes to people as Eskimos, you know, instead of God in the area doing much. What, well, I'm dead? No, I haven't heard that story. I'm going, well, actually, I'm telling my old man, don't shut up. Well, hey, no, I'm okay. Did anybody else find anything you'd like? Let me help you with. Oh, thank you. I'm taking way much more. Thank you very much. I love you all. I didn't know.